All right. Hi, everybody. This is a special RCFB Talk 44. My name is Bob Akairi. I'm going to be joined by my co-host, SRS Sirius. And we're going to be joined by John Canzano, a longtime columnist, longtime author. And he has the Bald-Faced Truth, both a radio show available across Oregon, as well as on his website, johncanzano.com. So we're going to go ahead and set up right now. He should be joining us shortly. We always like to set up just a couple seconds early, make sure we've got everybody. All right. So I can see my co-host is now here. So we're going to be talking a lot about what's going on in the Pac-12 with John. And we're going, oh, there he is. I see he just joined us. So we're going to go ahead and hit that invite to speak and start this going. Great. All right. Ah, there we go. John, can you hear us? Oh, it's a little tricky. I know this is your first one doing it, so just go ahead.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, man.
Awesome. Great. And Sirius, you're here too, right?
I am, and everything is working as it's supposed to be for once.
You know, I know we wanted to first say it's almost a one-year anniversary of the departure of Larry Scott. I don't know if that deserves some kind of celebration, but we thought we'd note it.
Yeah, I think it's worth celebrating. I mean, I think, you know, the path that the Pac-12 finds itself on right now, it started with Larry Scott and some bad decisions, that bad leadership that led the Pac-12 to a position where they lost the LA schools. So, yes, let's celebrate that.
So you have, obviously, you're based in Oregon. What is the general mood and feeling of Oregon and Oregon State fans as the Pac-12 moves forward with this new reality that the LA schools are out in 2 years? What is the feeling as things move forward?
Yeah, I think it's one of the interesting things about the Pac-12 is just how different every campus is, different markets, different motivations. Like, even in the state of Oregon, for years, Oregon State operated with the goal of simply being bowl eligible every year. That was their model. Get bowl eligible, renew a bunch of season tickets. That worked for Oregon State. And, you know, we all know Oregon was trying to win nationally and had a national brand and appeared in the national championship game twice in the last 11 years. So we've got two very different universities. So at Oregon, I think there was a real urgency when UCLA and USC left. There was an urgency for Oregon to try to tailgate behind those two right into the Big Ten or land in the SEC. I had one prominent Oregon official tell me that Phil Knight did not pour all that money into Oregon to end up in the minor leagues. And essentially, that's what it was looking like right away. And so I think there was a lot of urgency and a lot of focus at Oregon. But Oregon State was doing, I think, what some of the other Pac-12 members were doing, Washington State and Oregon State in particular, I think were the most vulnerable because they were not going to be invited under any scenario into the SEC or the Big Ten. And they began to, I think, fear that the Mountain West or something like that would be where they end up. And so I think we have very different agendas, even within the conference. And I find that really interesting.
You mentioned Phil Knight. What do you think his position, his role is in all of this? Is he said to be kind of a little bit of a kingmaker for, you know, the remnants of the Pac-12? Or is he just kind of, you know, he's there, he's got a lot of money, but, you know, he's just throwing it all at Oregon, and that's kind of where his involvement ends?
Well, over the years, it's interesting. We all associate him with Oregon, but he's been heavily involved at Stanford because he got his MBA at Stanford and he cares about Stanford. He has even reached out to other Pac-12 schools when they find themselves in crisis to help bail them out. And he did that with Oregon State in 2009 when Pat Casey, the baseball coach at Oregon State, was being lured by Notre Dame and big money at Notre Dame. Phil Knight reached out to Oregon State and he said, "What do you need to help keep him there?" And he paid Pat Casey's salary. He paid that difference and made that donation and wanted it real quiet, but it got out. And so I think he's a legacy guy, grew up in Portland, went to the University of Oregon, made his fortune there. He headquartered his company in Beaverton. Obviously, the Blazers we saw recently, you know, he made a written offer for the Blazers. At 84 years old, it's not because he wants to own an NBA team. I think it's because he cares very deeply about legacy. He cares about the region. And so for those reasons, I do think he's involved here. And I think he's a player here. And, you know, I was told working on something behind the scenes very early. And his relationship with ESPN is interesting. You see the Phil Knight Invitational. They're an ESPN partner. He has, you know, I don't think he could direct ESPN on what to do, but he's got some juice there and he's got some clout. And it's why I think ESPN has emerged in part as the likely partner for the Pac-12. And I had one AD in the conference tell me that even if it's just rhetoric, even if it's just Phil Knight saying, hey, keep the Pac-12 together or talking to the TV partners, even if it's not his money, there's value in it because it's Phil Knight.
You know, we had Scott Bell on last night. He was kind of talking about Michigan football. And, of course, there was some overlap there with Oregon because Oregon just recently got the commit from Dante Moore, who was, you know, coming from Detroit. And part of the things that Scott mentioned that kind of influenced him, you know, was the fact that, you know, Nike and Phil Knight are involved. And that always helps now that we're in the NIL space. So shifting gears just slightly on this, how big of a player is that going to be for Oregon, especially as they're trying to, you know, solidify their standing and everything right now and get ready for whatever comes next? The fact that they do have that kind of backing when it comes to this new evolving NIL space.
Yeah, I think it helps. I think, you know, the bigger thing is, you know, if you are a university that happens to sit in a powerful television market, that trumps everything right now. It's why people are talking about SMU, tiny old little old SMU, as a potential partner for the Pac-12 maybe down the road. I mean, it's not because SMU brings anything other than the Dallas-Fort Worth TV market, but NIL and everything that we've seen in the last 5 years in college athletics is all left these universities desperately seeking new revenue, desperate to align themselves. I mean, I think it caused the formation of what we currently see as the Big Ten and the SEC, in part because those universities were all just chasing revenue and trying to matter. But I think Oregon and Washington, and maybe to some extent Arizona State, now hold an unusual amount of clout within the Pac-12 conference. And I think in Washington and in Arizona State's case, it's the Phoenix and Seattle TV markets that the Pac-12 absolutely has to keep. And then in Oregon's case, I mean, you're only talking about 1.1 million households in the footprint of Oregon State, but you have the brand of Oregon, you have Phil Knight, you have the fact that Oregon nationally does attract, you know, television partners in a way that others don't. And so I think all those things kind of make Oregon a little bit of the glue of this conference right now. And it was said early, if Oregon or Washington had bolted to the Big Ten, I think the Pac-12 would have fully splintered in pieces. But they don't appear to have an option there. And I think as it stands right now, I'm being told by multiple ADs in the conference that they are galvanized and that they believe they are going to stay together with the remaining 10 members.
So the Pac-12 is currently in the exclusive 30-day negotiating window with ESPN. Should we then expect much in terms of movement in that period? Or, I mean, are we going to presume there's also top secret machinations happening after, you know, UCLA, USC, and the Big Ten managed to pull out over everyone?
Yeah, it's interesting because I asked, you know, I reached out to the former Fox president, Fox Sports Network's president, Bob Thompson. I asked him, I said, look, this 30-day window, help me understand, how does this work? Like, you know, who's bidding? If ESPN and the Pac-12 get deal in day five, can they make a deal? And it's pretty interesting, only Fox and ESPN at this point can bid. ESPN is the more likely bidder, and I think has emerged as the kingmaker really in that scenario. But because Fox doesn't need the Pac-12 games anymore, they've got LA, they've got USC, they've got UCLA. You know, they stretch all the way to Rutgers in New York. Like, Fox has orchestrated the network that it wants to be. And so I think right now ESPN is the likely partner. I'm told they're moving towards a deal with ESPN. I don't know if it's going to take the full 30 days. August 4th is the expiration of this negotiating period. But if ESPN and the Pac-12 come to an agreement, Fox still has the right to either waive their rights or make a counteroffer. So I really think it's interesting to know if we get a deal early, it means that Fox is playing nice and Fox is just going to go, hey, we're not interested. You guys go ahead. Because it's really not in Fox's interest to help ESPN and the Pac-12 appear to get some footing here. They're competitors. But I would expect that ESPN's going to have the best deal. I think they're going to partner the Pac-12 in a partnership that adds some value to the ACC. I think you'll see the restless members of the ACC, like Miami and Clemson in particular, and maybe Florida State, get some additional payday because of the way they're going to structure this thing. But I'm told that's the direction they're heading.
Does that mean that we're going to see an actual Pac-12 network beyond this little weird amalgamation that never has been very viable? Kind of like what we've seen ESPN do with the ACC network?
Yeah, I believe that the ACC network would replace the Pac-12 network. I think they'd rename it. But all the content, the Olympic sports, everything you've seen, kind of that hodgepodge of stuff that's on the Pac-12 network, I think would be part of a new production. And, you know, and that's not going to wow a lot of people. But the part of the partnership that I really like is, you know, I'm being told that what they're talking about is, you know, those traditional non-conference games that you see in the early part of the year that the Pac-12 teams play, replacing some of those games with crossover games with the ACC. So you get Mario Cristobal in Miami coming to Autzen Stadium to play Oregon, and you get Florida State at Utah, and you get Clemson going to Washington. And then at the end of the season, in that traditional week before the playoff teams are selected, where the title games are being held, instead of title games, you get a crossover game with the ACC champion. Let's say it's Clemson playing Utah, the Pac-12 champion, in Vegas. And the second place team, let's say it's Oregon in the Pac-12, playing Miami in Vegas. And the design of that is twofold. One, the programs themselves get another chance to get a quality win in front of the playoff committee. But two, and more importantly probably for what we're talking about, ESPN gets two more games that it can monetize and probably do it at a high level. And it sprinkles that money across the ACC and the Pac-12, and everybody now views that partnership potentially as the third option in college football.
You know, John, I know you've touched on this in your writings, and I do enjoy johnconzano.com, and I mentioned it at the beginning of the half hour, and I wanted to mention it again, but does ESPN have an incentive to lowball the Pac-12 in these negotiations?
Yeah, there could be. Because if you're ESPN, you realize that you've got the leverage here. The only thing I think keeping ESPN honest is the fact that the ACC is so restless. And I think it really is motivated to make those members happy. But yeah, if you're ESPN, you could lowball the Pac-12 here, which I think would trigger especially Arizona State. I think they are the one sort of squirrely university that, you know, they're sitting in Phoenix. They now understand, like everybody else, that media markets matter more than anything. And so they're potentially going, look, we're sitting in a media market that is good for 2.1 million households. We want more than a one share. And by the way, we just got lowballed by ESPN. We might take our media market to the Big 12. And I think that scenario, ESPN could potentially implode the Pac-12 by lowballing the Pac-12, causing Arizona State to break away, which I think would cause Arizona, Colorado, and Utah to become potential candidates for the Big 12. And in that scenario, ESPN then turns to the Big 12 and says, look, we want to do business with you. But I think option A is the better option. And I think the fact that Clemson, Miami, and Florida State in particular are all a little restless with that deal that runs through 2036. This gives ESPN a solution to that that works.
You mentioned the Big 12. They've got a new commissioner coming in, Brett Yormark. Seems to be really dynamic, aggressive, you know, very much a businessman kind of approach to running a conference. And he's already made some comments about how they're getting flooded with phone calls from different teams that are interested in moving in. And we know like that half of those are just Memphis. But what about the rest of them? Who do you think is trying to see about making that jump to the Big 12? And right now, do you think we're more likely to see an expansion of the Big 12 via Pac-12 teams, or is the Pac-12 just going to be able to close ranks and solidify their position?
I think that I do not see the Big 12 as a raider here of the Pac-12, unless those other scenarios I laid out happen. I think the Pac-12 is the more likely aggressor to cannibalize some Big 12 teams. And if you are the Big 12 conference, you have to be really nervous now. You have a new commissioner who's basically, he was first day on the job when this all happened. You're watching the ACC and the Pac-12 get together. There could be, I think, an 11th hour scenario where the Big 12 goes, look, we don't want to be left out. How do we get in on this? And, you know, we're happy to join the ACC and the Pac-12. And I think that scenario is plausible. Like, I could see that happening. I think from the Pac-12 standpoint, the SMU Dallas-Fort Worth market is interesting to me. And also Houston and Baylor are interesting to me, because if you grab Houston and Baylor, you are essentially grabbing, you know, through the Houston TV market, about 2.5 million households. And, you know, you could add Dallas-Fort Worth, that's another 2.9. You're suddenly not so sad about losing Los Angeles, which was 5.7 million households. So I think they're trying to replace a divot. And I think if, you know, as the listeners sort of look at, you know, who are likely candidates, you got to look at the Nielsen DMAs, look at the top 50 markets and ask yourself who adds value. And that's why Syracuse is valuable to the ACC. It's New York. Even though people in New York, we all know, are not watching Syracuse games, you know, it's why Rutgers is in the Big Ten. So this geography and the TV households matter as much as anything. And I think, you know, all of those questions about would Memphis be attractive, would San Diego State be attractive, how about Boise State, it all comes back to media revenue, potential media revenue.
Does the rise of the Big Ten and SEC mean that the Pac-12 will essentially become a feeding ground for potential head coaches?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think it already is. Look at Mike Leach going to Mississippi State from Washington State, doubled his pay. Mel Tucker was at Colorado. Michigan State said, look, we're going to take your salary, we're going to double it, we're going to take your assistant coaching pool. $3 million he was getting at Colorado, he's getting $6 million now at Michigan State. I mean, I think, hasn't that always been that way? Mario Cristobal to Miami. I mean, you were watching the haves poach on the have-nots. And the underlying theme is, if you don't have a media rights package that can justify paying coaches at an exorbitant level, you're going to get outbid. So I think that the short-term aim of the Pac-12 is, we, you know, you've got to keep the SEC and the Big Ten within view of the front windshield. You know, it's like they're following them on the freeway. They need to be able to see where they're going. But then longer term, I do think they need to think about strategy, and they need to think about alliance, and, you know, putting yourself shoulder to shoulder with Clemson and Miami in football. And then let's not forget basketball, the chance for Duke and Carolina in the ACC to play some crossover games in men's basketball against Arizona and Oregon. I mean, there's just some value there that I think could really help those conferences.
Shifting gears a little bit, you reported on the University of California Regents and their meetings and some of the, you know, interplay there. Do you mind walking us through like what the actual potential meetings are in terms of the where UCLA is going, if they can actually stop them going to the Big Ten, and then how that's going to impact Cal as a follow up?
Yeah, and I thought John Wilner did a really good job yesterday breaking that story. You know, the UC Board of Regents, they're going to meet next week. They're going to discuss UCLA's move to the Big Ten. That move has the potential to adversely affect, you know, other members of that UC system. So there's a lot wrapped up in it. You know, we all noted that the paperwork for this meeting included the word litigation, and we all maybe I took it to mean like, oh, are they going to sue? Are they going to sue UCLA? I'm told no, that the reason they include that is because they want to take that meeting private. It allows them to, you know, not have to have that be a public discussion. The board of directors for the UC system, they're not going to sue UCLA. That would be like the board of directors at Apple suing Apple. But could they stop UCLA from leaving? Probably not. Because ultimately, the question that needs to be answered is this in the best interest of the UC system? UCLA is part of that. They're going to get $75 million a year under the Big Ten's media deal. And I think UCLA's argument is, hey, this solves our debt problem. This is good for our university. I think there'll be some discussion about whether travel is good and some ancillary things. But, you know, the bigger issue is, you know, I was told by a former state senator in Washington who reached out to me that he thinks that the bondholders of the Cal University debt may have the stronger legal case, because if this UCLA decision affects their credit worthiness or their bond value, they might be able to get an injunction to stop UCLA. But I think that's all stuff that, you know, isn't going to affect college football fans. And in the end, I think UCLA is able to get out of there. I think it may just be the case of the Regents of the UC system covering their butts here.
You know, I thought that was a fascinating point. I mean, I'm an attorney by profession, and I thought that was a great point. The idea of just saying potential litigation, suddenly you have a private meeting and you have every excuse not to share the content of it with the media or anything like that. Although it would be funny to see the to see the UC system demand that the Big Ten, if you take UCLA, you have to take UC Merced. We're 10 fine universities in Merced. But you had a question you wanted to ask.
Oh, that's just cold blooded to UC Merced. Well, and also to the Big Ten if they had to take them. we already have Chicago. Why do we need another one that's not as good? In terms of the Pacific Northwest schools, you know, we kind of talked about how there's a good chance that this is going to solidify. There's not going to be a shift. But if there is, do you see the dance partners being Oregon and Oregon State, Washington and Washington State? Or do you think Oregon and Washington would try to go together, leaving Oregon State and Washington State kind of stuck with the other, just because of how their schools line up instead of, you know, the state partnership aspect?
Yeah, you think about what you would want if you were a potential, let's just say we're the Big Ten and we're looking at Oregon and Oregon State, Washington State. You know, I want the Seattle TV market, so I want Washington, and I want Oregon's brand. And, you know, Oregon's TV market is only 1.1 million households. Seattle's double that. But I think you marry those two together and they're interesting. But my TV executive, the former Fox president, told me that the valuation on Oregon and Washington, as far as media rights, you know, he said it's probably somewhere around $30 million a year per university. So look at the Big Ten, you know, their $1 billion TV deal was essentially going to be about $71 million per university. It's why UCLA and USC pencil out for them. When you add the LA TV market to that, you're adding more than $70 million of value per university. So I think Oregon and Washington are not even halfway there by Big Ten standards. And that's going to hurt feelings, of course, like everybody wants to be included. But, you know, if Oregon and Washington were in larger markets or could justify 70 million plus in potential revenue, I think the Big Ten would be hot after them. And so I think the only way either one of those schools gets into the Big Ten is as a dance partner with Notre Dame. If they have to balance that equation, I would expect the Big Ten to look at Oregon, Washington, and maybe Stanford as the likely dance partners for Notre Dame. And for your question, that leaves Oregon State and Washington State scrambling and in a conference that looks like some blend of the Mountain West after it's done.
So, you know, we talked early on about the fact that this was a long time coming with these issues for the Pac-12. How asleep at the wheel have Pac-12 presidents been in all of this? Because are they as responsible for the state of the conference as Larry Scott? Because, I mean, to an extent, he just served at their pleasure.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I do think that the presidents and chancellors, the Pac-12 CEO group is what they call themselves. I think they hold some responsibility here. And in particular, you know, there's been a lot of turnover. And so when you look around the conference, it's like 9 of the 12 did not hire Larry Scott, you know, and so it's hard to blame them all. But there were some enablers in there. Arizona State and Michael Crow, big time enabler. He bought whatever Larry Scott was selling. Former Oregon State President Ed Ray was an enabler, and Gene Block at UCLA was an enabler. So those three in particular, I think, hold more responsibility than others. But I think, to your point, these are university presidents and chancellors. And think about how all of our lives have changed in the last couple of years. They are managing billion-dollar enterprises, their own campuses. They're focused on distance learning, not distance learning, budgets, layoffs, furloughs. I don't know if they were asleep at the wheel, but they were certainly driving distracted, like when USC and UCLA made the bolt.
So with that in mind, how much of the current state of the Pac-12 do you think can be laid at the feet of Larry Scott, you know, in terms of carrying the blame on that, for allowing it to get to this point? And then, you know, what culpability does George have moving forward, and, you know, what's his path to try to figure out how to fix this?
I think when George Kliavkoff surfaces and he talks, and I think it's going to be like Pac-12 Media Day, which is coming up at the end of July here, where he will have to, you know, stand up and talk. I think he's going to accept some responsibility here. I think it's his style. And I do think he's got a role. You know, I was told by one Pac-12 AD that they really like George, but maybe he's too nice. Like, you know, he believed USC when they told him they were in and they weren't going anywhere. And, you know, I don't know if you can blame someone for trusting, you know, one of the 12 members, but I think George holds some responsibility and I think he'll accept that. I think Larry Scott clearly paved the path there. I think the presidents and chancellors let it drag on too long. I mean, hell, we were all writing about it and talking about it, you know, 4 or 5 years before it happened. And it was evident that the Pac-12 was falling behind. The revenues were not there. Their expenses were too high. They were, you know, jimmy jacking around with this Pac-12 network thing that, you know, really was, you know, it was really good people, and the content of it potentially was great, but it had no distribution. Like it just wasn't it wasn't great for most of the conference. Now, women's college basketball benefited from it because the Pac-12 schools could recruit and tell recruits, hey, you're going to be on TV all the time. And other conferences weren't doing that. And I think it kind of explains some of the rise in women's college basketball, but that doesn't pay the bills. And so, you know, I think the responsibility is pretty evident. It's Larry Scott on the path. Kliavkoff should have been more tuned in. He had one job. Do not lose USC. He lost USC. He's got to fix that. But I sort of like who he is. Like, think about his background, his makeup. He worked at Hulu. He was integral in forming what Hulu is now today. He was at MGM Entertainment in Vegas. We all know you know, I don't know when the last time all the listeners have been to Vegas, but you drive into Vegas and you look around, they are building stuff. Like, they don't mess around. You want a major league team? Hey, we might get one. Let's build a stadium. Let's build an NBA arena. We don't even know if a team's coming, but we'll build it. So George, I think, comes from the mindset, very forward thinking, very different, very proactive. It's why I think we may get some really creative wrinkles in a potential ACC Pac-12 partnership, because I think he could call upon his relationships in Vegas and his relationships in entertainment and maybe marry some things together that squeeze some additional revenue out of a potential deal with ESPN. And every dollar right now gets you a step closer to the Big Ten and the SEC. And the aim here ultimately is the playoff, right? When they did not come to an agreement in that last cycle on, hey, let's expand the playoff. You know, we all probably now realize that the Big Ten and the SEC, they want to monopolize that thing. They don't want automatic bids for the Pac-12 and others. Like, they want to get in 5 or 6 teams and take as much of that revenue as possible. So right now, the aim of the Pac-12 and the ACC has to be, you know, hey, if there's a 12-team playoff, we need to have three or four teams in there or we're really getting left behind.
Well, clearly the Pac-12 just needs to take Portland State and lock down that Portland market. But your time is short. You have another interview coming up in a few minutes that you've got to prep for. Just for what people are out there, tell us about the site really quick, Bald Face Truth.
Yeah, I went rogue. I went out on my own. I've worked at six different newspapers, covered a whole bunch of things, and I was a beat reporter, covered Bobby Knight eons ago and Jerry Tarkanian, and you know, I was working writing columns for 20 years here, and ultimately just decided I wanted to do something different, something new, and wake up and write what I want to write, and travel where I want to travel, and tell the stories I want to tell. So I started johncanzano.com, and literally have been blown away by the people who subscribe. There's free subscriptions, there's paid subscriptions. I just tell people, get what works for you. But it really just allows me to wake up every day and write the stuff I care about. And man, I found my joy again. And I think anybody who has gone through anything in the pandemic where you've made a change and, you know, and discovered something new, like, you know, I really I'm having a lot of fun with it. So if people want to go to johncanzano.com, you can see what I've been doing.
Well, thank you so much, John. We really appreciate you joining us this morning. And thanks to all of you out there from Sirius and me. It's always good to have you all around. That was RCFB Talk 44. We had John Canzano on. It will be automatically recorded. So if you missed the beginning of it, this link will turn into a recording for the next 30 days. So thanks, everyone. We hope you all have a great day. Take care.